Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by Cashfly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Go to ring.com/know-how and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security Kit. Today on Know-How...
It's Synology NAS Madness.
Part 1. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and pop out of little holes in the universe. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
I'm Jason Howell. How's
and
it going?
For the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be opening up the big hard drive in your head so we can pour in the bits that you need to do the know stuff.
That sounds painful.
It does, right?
Yeah.
I know. Especially since we're all on SSDs now. Jason, how are you, my friend?
That's a personal statement.
I know. I'm sorry.
Just go around saying everybody's on SSDs now. Jeez, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Now, the reason why we didn't have you on last week, because we're trying to do a regular rotation, is because you were evidently dealing with a very fine institution here in California that is always customer friendly, a PGE.
Oh, yeah. Home ownership. Isn't that fun? Isn't it fun when you own a home and things break and then you have to spend lots of money to fix it and then you rely on other people to do things and it takes forever and makes you not come on the show?
Sorry. Today on Know-How, why you don't want to buy a home.
I'm sorry I wasn't here. I'm happy to be here today.
No, I feel that. I mean, they were doing what? They were hooking up new power lines?
Well, yeah, it's a number of things that we have going on, but it was an electrical thing, and They set up the main problem is when you set up an appointment for things like this, they're like, great, we can come on Thursday morning between 8 and noon. They're like, okay, is that like 8 and noon closer to 8 or 8 and noon closer to noon? They're like, somewhere
no,
in between there.
What we mean is 8 to noon, probably closer to 5.
And I think they ended up, thankfully they came within that block. But I still wouldn't have made it in time.
Yeah.
It was cutting it way too close ultimately. So, anyways,
Its service is better in San Francisco. We just had a major PG&E issue where we lost the mains to the campus. We lost one of the three phases to the campus, so all of our equipment was browning out. And there was a sparking transformer, like a fire type thing. They came up really quickly for that. I mean,
yes, I know. Turns out when there's fire involved.
Yeah.
Now you tell me.
Set the power pole on fire, PG&E would be like, we'll be there in 5 minutes.
There's a fire. You should really get over here right now while you're here.
No, but folks, we're not here to talk about PG&E. We're not here to talk about Jason somewhat regretting, but still very much loving home ownership. Instead, we're going to do some Synology NAS madness. Now, you've seen Synology on the show. You know that it's the NAS that I trust right now. I switched over from Netgear just because their support wasn't great. Synology has a wonderful operating system. They've got solid hardware, and they've been in the price performance leader spot for the last 8 or so years. So I wanted to show you a few of the things that it can do based on questions that you've asked. Now, Jason, do you have a NAS at your house?
I don't, no.
We're going to have to fix that.
Okay.
Yeah. The old NAS, when people thought of NAS, they thought, you just take a hard drive and you hook it up to the network.
Right.
Which it was.
Yeah.
Network-attached storage.
Any of the network-attached storage that I have at home relies on my Mac Pro in the other room being powered on.
Yeah, see?
And that's a bad idea.
That's a bad idea for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
A, because, you need that device. You take it away and everyone on the network loses those resources.
Mm-hmm.
B, anytime it's kind of flimsy and temporary like that, there's always going to be issues when people are accessing things.
And not only that, it's a power suck, right?
It is.
Like,
it's
I have to imagine
suck.
My big Mac Pro. It's like a 2008 Mac Pro. You can hear the fan inside. You know, it's kind of a nightmare at this point. That's probably drawing a heck of a lot more power than something
this. This is at sleep, this is something like 10 watts.
Okay.
I mean, it's nothing. It's less than a light bulb, less than an LED light bulb. Hmm. And, of course, that's why you had to have PG&E come to your house, because they had the power of the Mac, right?
I don't know how to turn it off, PG&E.
No, but also a dedicated NAS box, something that's not super low-end, will allow you to install plugins. So a NAS isn't just a NAS anymore. It's not just a hard drive on the network. It's a media server. It's an email server. It's a VPN server. It's a backup server. It's a time machine. It's all of those things, and you get to choose what features you want to activate. That's why I'm kind of excited. I mean, some people see this as boring tech. I see this as tech that everyone should consider right after they install the switches in their home.
It does all those things. Usually I think of those things as being associated with an operating system of some sort. Like, what is it running on?
Right. So Synology runs Linux. It's a flavor of Linux. And the nice thing about this is they build NASs and they also build routers. And it's essentially the same operating system between the two. Slight differences, but if you learn how to use the UI of one, you can use the UI of both. And they are very complementary, which we'll get into that probably Synology Madness Part 4 or so. But Jason, you ready to get into some basic stuff? Let's start off easy.
Let's jump into the weeds. Alex Gomez wrote in and says, "Hello, Twit community. Just had a very basic question on the best way to keep a small office connected. I currently have 3 computers and a Western Digital MyBook network drive. I can't seem to find something to back up that network drive on a fixed, regular basis. Any suggestions?"
Yes. First of all, Alex, thank you very much for the question. I think the first suggestion would be to throw away that Western Digital MyBook NAS. It was a bad NAS when they released it. It's a worse NAS now. They haven't updated it. There's no features on it. It's slow. And the worst thing about it is I've had many of those just die. Up and up, the electronics and the hard drive. So it's
they all die eventually, though, right?
They all die eventually, but what you're looking for is a device that will gracefully die.
Yeah,
like it will give you a way to recover everything, other than just saying, you know what,
yeah,
all
I'm
that
done
data,
today.
Yeah, those pictures of your kid. Did you really, really want them? You can just have another kid,
right?
So yes, I hate to say that, but I would say 100% absolutely. Yeah. Especially if you're using it for a small business, do not use that MyBook anymore. Put it in a closet, give it to a friend or to a person you don't like that much.
Take it out and office space it.
Yeah, office space
would be fun.
Yeah, dang, it feels good to be a gangster. But we've got you're in luck because this is the NAS show. Or
yeah,
is he in luck because he's on it because it's the NAS show?
I think all of the above.
Yeah, whatever. I wanted to show you a couple of options that are not that expensive but are perfect for a small business. Now, this I took a look at not too long ago. This is a Synology Disk Station 2-bay. This is their 713 Plus. It's a little dated right now, but still crazy fast. Now, you can find these probably for about $240 or so. Now, the nice thing about this is you can buy them diskless and then just put the disk that you want into the drive. By the way, do not get expert installation because that's silly. The installation takes all of 5 minutes.
Man, someone come in and just kind of go like, here you go.
Oh, look.
Right, there it is.
You've got drives. Now, this thing is it runs on a dual-core 2.13 gigahertz CPU. That's going to be important because you're going to want an enclosure that has enough CPU power and memory to run plugins on top of the operating system.
Things like VPN that, you know, you don't want a slow process running on something like a VPN.
Or a media server. Can you imagine
using this as a media server? That's a better example.
And then it stutters every 5 minutes because the transcoding's too slow.
Right. Oh,
and which, by the way, that's exactly what the MyBook will do.
Yeah.
This also has 1 gigabyte of DDR3 memory. It's got two gigabit Ethernet ports, which I like. So you can dual home this thing, or you can bond them if you want a little bit more performance. It's also got 2 USB 3.0 ports, 1 USB 2.0 port. I'm going to explain why that's important. And an eSATA port. So if you wanted to hook up a like super high-speed drive to this, you have the ability to do it.
Now, hooking up a high-speed drive to this, though, this already has drives inside. Is that just like for temporary access?
Or? Oh, we'll show you, Jason.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to learn you something.
Am I teasing ahead?
Oh, yeah. But
okay, good.
I love it. Tease more.
No.
Now, you're going to find that for about...
Oh,
that's not good. Yeah. Can we edit that out? No. Leave that in there. All right. Now, if you wanted to do a bit more, if you think you're going to run out of space on a 2-bay, there's also this. We took a look at this a while back. This is their 418 Play. It's a little not as stocked, but the nice thing is it is a 4-bay, so you've got twice as many drives, which also increases the number of RAID options that you can use. Also has 2 gigabit Ethernet ports, has 1 USB 3.0 port, no eSATA, 1 USB 3.0 port on the front. And by the way, these are all hot swap. So if a drive fails, you just pull it out and put in the new one, and it will resync. Synology is incredibly good about doing that. This one's going to run you about $400, so just under twice as much. But it's also a really good bit. In fact, we're going to be using this in Madness Part 2.
And is this a RAID array? So there's duplicate content on all drives, or is it just expanded large amounts
of
storage?
Now, you can choose that. So what I'm using on this 2 is I'm using what's called RAID 1. So it's Mirror. Everything on one drive is also on the other drive.
Right. So one fails, you've got the
precisely.
Other.
Now, the disadvantage of that is you're using up one drive because it's just mirroring the other one.
Sure.
You could also run RAID 0, which we called Suicide RAID, which stripes the two drives. Now, that actually does give you faster performance, and it increases the size of the array because now you've got the full capacity of both drives. However,
One goes out.
It's gone.
Gone.
You lose one, everything's gone.
That's not a good trade-off.
So that's not a good trade-off. Yeah. This is why maybe going up to a 4 might be nice.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because you can do this as JBOD, which is just a bunch of disks. So every disk you plug in looks like another volume that you can access. You can do RAID 1, which is mirroring, and just mirror, 2 and 2, which is kind of a waste. You could do RAID 0 striped across, which will give you performance, but then again, that is Suicide RAID. But now they have versions of RAID 5 and RAID 10 and RAID X, which basically give you the capacity of three of the drives plus one drive for parity / hot swap. So you can lose one drive and the array still stays up.
Oh, man, that makes my brain hurt trying to figure out exactly how it's possible.
Just remember that the more bays that you have, the more options you have for how you set it up. Because you can set it up for redundancy, you can set it up for always on reliability, or you could just set it up for maximum capacity and speed. Mm. All right, but we're going to start with this because this is the simplest. So we've got this little drive. You're going to need a couple of other things. Since this is a driveless chassis, you're going to need to get a couple of drives. And the ones I would suggest, if you go to the link for this, Alex, are Western Digital Reds. Now, we've talked about this at length on the show. The reason why I like the Red series is they run cool. And inside of an enclosure like this, the number one killer of drives is heat.
And do you have a fan? Well, there is a fan.
Oh, there's a fan. There's nothing that's a fan. But, you still put them into a confined area.
Right.
And you're going to heat them
on top of each other. Yeah.
And these will run half as hot as a typical desktop drive. They're kind of designed for NASes. And also there's some other fun stuff with the queuing, but I'm not going to go into that because that's going to make your head explode.
Okay.
Jason already had all the RAID stuff in there. So
yeah.
Now, your question was about having a place for everyone to use on the network plus having a regular backup. Now, to do this, you could. Some people will just say, I'll just run this in RAID 1 so that I have a mirror. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I have an extra drive. No, because that is not a backup. A backup cannot be the same device that it's backing up. If the power supply on this fails, it doesn't matter if you've got mirror drives. You still can't access it until you get a new power supply. Mm-hmm. That's a no-go. Instead, get yourself an external drive. If you go to the link for this one, this is the one I would suggest. This is actually a Seagate 8-terabyte drive, external drive. It's USB 3. This will plug straight into one of the USB 3.0 ports. And what this will do is it would allow you to more than copy over everything that's on the array. And if you're running it in RAID 1 so that you've got 4 terabytes of capacity, you can now copy the entire array twice onto the backup drive. And we'll explain why you might want to do that.
So let me be clear. On the RAID 0 is the one, is the Suicide RAID, right? But you get really great
performance.
Yeah. Is that the situation in which you would do this? Have that so that you get the performance, but also that it's backing up to this external drive. You've got your external backup. You've got the performance. It's like best of all worlds.
Yeah,
Is that good enough?
I have done that. I don't prefer it. I'm sort of a belt and suspenders guy. I want the extra drive in the array so that I can immediately swap out. Plus, I want the backup in case something happens to the array.
Okay.
Again,
there are a million different ways to skin a cat.
There's so many different ways to do this. But performance is not really an issue.
Yeah.
If he's really dealing with a small office, 3-4 users, and even if that increase is 2 or 3 times, they're not going to stress this in RAID 1.
Okay.
They won't even come close to stressing it. So why not take a little bit of extra safety?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm going to do is I've got this. This is a 1 terabyte SSD that I've got in a USB 3.0 enclosure just to make my point, because I didn't want to bring in one of the 8-terabyte drives because they're currently backing things up. And I'm just going to plug that into one of the USB 3 ports on the back. Now, the cool thing about this is it will automatically mount it. So it's doing its thing. It's it knows that, oh, I've got a new drive, mm-hmm. and it will recognize it as new storage. Now, let's start off with something super simple, because now you've got a RAID, you've got it hooked up, hopefully you've got your drives installed, and you've got your backup drive connected, and the NAS has recognized everything, but you still need to grant access to the people who you actually want to use the NAS. Mm-hmm. Two ways to do this, really. The first way is to, it asks you, do you just want to be an open store? That's basically anyone who's connected to the network can access me and have full access. Please don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. That doesn't sound like a very good idea.
That's a horrible idea. You may trust the people on your network, but it means someone else could just plug in, or maybe they get into one of your wireless access points, and suddenly they go, hey, you know what? 8 terabytes of data? No, that's too much, man. Let's just delete that.
Or, that sounds like a lot. I'm going to go ahead and take some.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that. So what we're going to want to do is we're going to want to set user permissions for every user on your network. And it's actually really, really simple. If you go ahead and go to my computer, this is what the interface looks like. So this is DSM, Synology DSM. Though we need to set up users. So let's go ahead and create a share. We're going to go ahead and go to the control panel. I'm bringing it up here. Then we're going to go to the shared folder. Now, I've created a couple of folders here. We've got Padre SJ. We've got Raygun. We've got USB Share 1, which is the USB connected drive. So it's already recognized it. And then there's this. Web, it's default. I could actually get rid of it. That's because I'm also using this to host a web server. Okay. So these are the volumes. These are the volumes that have been created on the drives that are inside, which are running in RAID 1. So I've got two terabyte drives, so I've got a total of 2 terabytes worth of capacity. Mm-hmm. All right, now if I wanted to create a new one, super simple. All I have to do is create. And when I create, I'm going to give it a name. We're going to call this one, let's name it after Alex. We'll call it the Darkness. Okay, so we've got the Darkness. I could tell it where it wants to be. In this particular case, I've only got one volume because I only made one volume. I could hide it so that only he can see it. I can encrypt it, and I can also restrict access to administrators only. This is just basic information. So once I've done this, I can also choose if I want to encrypt the entire share. On a lower-end box, I wouldn't do this because encryption does actually use up some of your processor time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the nice thing about the Synology boxes versus some of their competitors, it has a built-in encryption key, encryption chip.
Okay, right.
So it does slow you a little bit, but just a tiny little bit. So go ahead and enable encryption. I'm not going to do it on this one because I don't want to spend the time to encrypt the volume, but normally I would. Now, you could also do things like have the NAS check periodically to see if the thing is still valid, because every once in a while you'll have an array go wonky. It's always good to know that before you actually need to access the data. And then confirm the settings. It's going to go ahead and create a folder called the Darkness. And as soon as it's done processing, I should go back to my folder list. And I'm going to give access to you, to me, and to the administrator. So this now means that I've got a folder that can be accessed by users of this NAS if I allow them to. But if you're a user of the NAS but not granted access to that folder, not only will you not be able to access it, you won't even be able to see it.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's the first part. Now let's go ahead and create a user. Same thing. I'm going to go ahead and go to the control panel. All right, and I'm going to go to user. Now you want to create a different user for everyone who's going to access the network. I know it's very tempting just to create like one group access username and password, but then you don't get the benefits. This will actually log what each person is doing, which is important in forensics. If you ever need to go back and find out what happened to a particular file or who filled up the NAS, if you give everyone their own user account, then it will log who did what. The cool thing is you can also tie this to the authentication for both Windows, Linux, and OS X machines.
Would that happen on an automatic basis, or you as an administrator still need to go in and determine that?
If I create a user that has the same credentials as
somebody that's already on the machine.
Right, as your Linux box, as my Windows box, as the OS X box, when it goes to access the NAS will say, who are you? And it will say, this is my credentials. And it will say, oh, I've got an account for you. Come on in.
Right.
And then it will open up all the folders that you're supposed to have.
Nice.
Yeah, it's actually kind of cool that way. All right. So in this particular case, I've actually created a JSON account here.
Thank you.
That's nice. That's so sweet. Yeah. Okay. Now, how do I access this? Super simple, actually. If you're still on my computer, I know that my Synology NAS is at 192.168.200.88. By the way, that number means nothing. I'm actually running this on a sub-router. It's a router in a router. Mm. So I can open up just a my computer window. Go 192.168.200.88. Now, it's asking me for network credentials because it checked the credentials on my laptop and it said, your credentials don't match up with anything I've got. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go ahead and use the one that I created for you, Jason. So it's Jason and I think it was 123456, was it? Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, super, super secure password.
That's what I would have picked. That's my password for
So
how did you know that?
I know, right? So you got access to the darkness because I allowed you to have access to the darkness.
All right.
However, you try to get into mine, and I said, no, you can't get in here. However, you've also got access to yours, and I've pre-populated your folder with some stuff. So what this shows you is that every person can now have their own folder on that shared space. It's just theirs. And maybe only the administrator can access it, or if you've got a group working together, give them both access. Mm-hmm. It's very granular.
Awesome.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So now, hopefully, all your users have mapped their folder as a drive to their computer, and they're now saving all their documents there. And you've got lots of space. You've got 4 terabytes or 8 terabytes if you're running Suicide Raid for them to put everything. Here's the cool thing. You wanted a way to make sure all of that was backed up on a regular basis. That's actually built in. You don't have to purchase anything else. This will handle it entirely for you. Let me show you how that works. So let's go back into the Synology admin page. There's a little thing that I love about Synology, and that's the fact that plugins, or what they call packages, are super easy to install. There we go. So in this particular case, the package that I'm going to be using, let's go for backup, is called Hyper Backup. And I've already got it installed. And what Hyper Backup will allow me to do is it will allow me to connect external storage or even remote storage. So I could have another NAS that's on the same network. Mm-hmm. And I can say, hey, you know what? Every day or every week or every 3 hours, whatever it might be, I want you to take the contents of these folders and put them onto the backup drive.
That's nice.
And it will do it automatically, without fail, every time it hits the schedule that you've created.
It will take changes or just do the whole image again?
You can set it
Okay. Which
way you want to do it. I tend to like to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I actually like to have multiple copies
right. Of
the whole thing.
Because if you're in the middle of rewriting this image and something happens, then you've
got a problem.
You've got a problem.
Or, for example, if you got crypt locked on one of the computers, you can actually go to an image before that happened.
Which is
kind of nice. So what I'm going to do is, let's redo this so that everyone can see what happens. So I'm going to click this, which is my main menu. It's going to show everything that I have installed. I'm going to go into Hyper Backup. And in my Hyper Backup vault, I already have one backup set up. I'm going to go and delete that. Let's redo it. So pop. There we go.
Okay.
That's a pop. So I'm going to create a new job, and I can create as many jobs as I want. So I can have multiple backup schedules of multiple folders. So I click that, and I'm going to do a data backup task. Now, it's going to say the destination. Where is this going to go? And now here's what I love. Look how many options there are. I can put it onto a local folder and USB, which is the external drive I have connected. I could put it onto a remote NAS. So if there's multiple NASs on my network, I can copy one NAS to another. So it's sort of like you keep my backup, I keep your backup. Mm-hmm. I can go to a Synology C2 Cloud Backup, which is their service, but I can also go to Amazon Drive, Google Drive, Microsoft Azure, Dropbox. So I can have this box back up to any of those things that I'm already using.
That's really nice.
It's super, super cool. And the nice thing is I can encrypt it. So even if it's going up to Dropbox, so let's say someone gets access to my Dropbox, they still can't access my backup because I encrypted it. And it's automatic. All right. So in this particular case, though, because this is only Synology
Madness Part 1. I'm going to go to a local USB. Now, here's where it gets fun. So my shared folder is I'm going to use USB 1. There we go. It's going to be putting it into the directory called PadreBot 2. And now I tell it, what do I want to back up? In this particular case, I'm going to say I want to back up everything in the Raygun folder. I could choose all the folders and put everything into one big backup. Mm-hmm. But because this does it automatically and it doesn't really affect the performance of the NAS, it's kind of nice to have this user, instead of the whole chunk.
Sure.
I can say, oh, something happened to Alex's files. I'm just going to go back in time on Alex's rather than restore everybody else. So I'm going to choose Raygun. This is something else. I can also back up my applications. I'm not going to do it on this one, but if I've got any other packages installed on this, like I've got a VPN package, I've got a web server package, I've got a media serving package, I could back that up so that all my settings are automatically saved. So if anything ever happens, I just come back from the backup and I go back to it as it was.
Right back to that state.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. I'm not going to do anything on that, this one particularly. Now, here's the part that you want. This is the scheduling. This allows you to tell it exactly when you want to do those tasks. So I can set it as a daily. I could set it as a weekly. I could choose the exact day and the exact time. As you can tell, I normally choose times when there's no one on the network, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I can also tell it to check the backups because people have had the experience of doing a backup and then finding out that the backup was actually corrupt and they lose everything. So you can actually have the array check the backups after it's made them. Now, once I do that, I can also enable backup rotation. This is the part that I like. And this is why I say get a USB drive that's larger than your array. I can make multiple copies of the backup, and it will just rotate them. Mm-hmm. So when it runs out of space, it's going to erase the first one.
Sure. But
until then, it'll make 15 copies.
How much larger should that drive be in order to kind of maximize?
I'm sort of two to one. So as large as the array is, I'm going to take a drive that's twice as large. Mm-hmm. And remember, I can hook up multiple drives to this. Mm-hmm. So if I start really bumping against the capacity, or let's say there's an account there that I really can't lose, like there's one that's for the finance office, I might plug in a drive and dedicate it just for backing that up. Mm-hmm. So again, flexibility. You choose what you need for your particular installation.
Right.
All right, so this gives me my backup, and it's going to ask me if I want to make the initial one, and I'll say yes. Now, here's the cool thing about using a SSD. Backing up to an SSD is wonderfully fast. Versus to a hard drive. Even with these few files, if I was trying to do a backup to a hard drive, it probably would take, you know, 5 minutes or so. So it's done. Now, if I use my file station to look at that SSD drive, there we go. Where'd you go? Why are you coming down there? There you go. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the USB share, and there's my PadreBot. So it's created a folder, and inside that folder, I have the files that were inside Raygun.
Hmm.
And it can make multiple versions of that, and I can just pull back the ones that I need.
Very nice.
Yeah. So there you go.
I like that. I like the process.
This entire setup is going to cost you about $550, but it gives you something that's far more reliable than that MyBook. And when we start getting into Synology Madness Part 2, Part 3, and you're using the same box to establish a web server, maybe a secure transaction server, my personal favorite, a VPN, it makes it all worth it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Not bad. 550 is not, well, how does that compare to what you know, you know, from his question, what he might have spent?
Well, he probably spent about $200 to $300 on that MyBook.
Okay.
Which is
and knowing it needs to be replaced.
Yeah.
And then kind of upgrading it a little bit more.
Right, right. Now, if you really, 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 really wanted to cheap out, you could just buy the enclosure, put one drive in now, and maybe get the backup one later on, and, you know, you're paying $300.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But what is your data worth to you?
Yep, absolutely.
Now, when we come back, Jason, we're going to get super propeller head on some network stuff. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I've never wore a propeller head hat, so yeah. All right. First time for everything.
Let's rock on.
That's what you meant, right?
We'll do that in just a second, but first, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, folks, every once in a while, I get to do an ad read for a company that I believe in, and Ring is definitely one of them, because I came to them before they were a sponsor of the network. I saw them at CES one year, and they had a very interesting solution, something that replaced the doorbell at your front door, your porch, and allowed you to have a two-way conversation with someone who might approach. it's motion sensitive, motion activated. It allows you to have an HD view of whoever might be coming. And more importantly, it allowed you to connect with your smartphone. So you could be anywhere in the world and still tell people that you were home. Now, this was important because I was worried about my parents. They moved to Las Vegas and there was a little bit of a crime wave. They live in a semi-retirement community and you'd have bad actors, I'll call them, who would go from door to door at a certain time of day because they knew that most of the residents had gone up to the club for lunch or a social event. And they'd ring the bell, and if no one answered, they'd start looking through the windows. And then they knew, we've probably got an hour or so to burglarize this place. Well, it happened time and time again. And I said, I need something. I need a product that can help me protect my parents, something that lets them talk to someone who comes to the door so that person thinks someone's home. And that solution was the Ring video doorbell. Now, this episode is brought to you by Ring and all of their products. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer, and the Ring video doorbell lets you see and speak to intruders on your smartphone from anywhere in the world. You can even share video clips with neighbors using the Ring app. Now, this has become one of my guilty pleasures. Ring has a Twitter feed filled with videos that have come off of Ring video doorbells that have helped people solve crimes or solve mysteries, figure out exactly what happened in front of their home. Like, this is one of my favorite. You have people who are having accidents, and, you know, they might have a different accounting, but you've got it on video, folks. Video is the new way to prove that you're in the right, and the Ring video doorbell is oh so right. Of course, they didn't stop there. Once they had the success of the video doorbell, they branched out. They've got their new floodlight and spotlight cam, which lets you build a ring of security around your entire property, not just your front door. Now, just like the Ring video doorbell, the floodlight cam is a motion-activated camera and floodlight that connects to your phone. With high-visibility floodlights, HD video, and two-way audio, it lets you know the moment anyone steps on your property. You can see and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your phone. Now, when things go bump in the night, you'll immediately know what it is. The Ring floodlight cams offer the ultimate in-home security. Thieves just can't hide with Ring because it can be everywhere. Monitor every corner of your property with a Ring of Security Kit, which includes a Ring video doorbell and your choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cams based on how much property you need to protect. And connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. Stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security Kit at ring.com/knowhow. That's ring.com/knowhow. That's $150 off when you go to ring.com/knowhow. And we thank Ring for their support of Know How. Okay, so we did a little propeller head stuff with the NAS. Mm-hmm. Now let's get propeller head with the network.
All right, let's do it. All we'll dive in. Rick Rangel?
I'm going to say Rungel.
Rungel. Wrote in to say, I have perhaps an easy question. I'm thinking of moving to a mesh network, but the ones I've looked at only have one or two LAN ports. But I need three or four. Would be nice in case I need another in the future. So here's the big question. If I have a router with one LAN, can I simply hook that up to a 4-to-5 port switch? If so, how does the addressing work? Will the router take care of that? And for static local IPs as well? Thanks.
Rick, thank you for asking this, because a lot of people feel like they should know this, and so they don't ask, and then it remains a mystery. We don't want mystery. We want know-how. We want knowledge. Now, here's the TLDR. You can go ahead and buy any off-the-shelf switch, any. Doesn't even have to be expensive. Plug it into your router, and then plug your devices into that switch, and it will work just fine. 100%, unless the device is destroyed, defective, or won't power up, it's going to work just fine. Now, we're know-how, though, and so we want to go a little deeper. You know, he asked that question, how does the addressing work? Which I think in his mind, he's saying, wait a minute, if I plug a camera into the switch and a computer that's plugged into the router wants to access that camera, how does it go from the computer to the router to the switch to the camera?
Right.
Which is a good question. We actually did cover this in one of our Networking 101 series, I think like episode 297 or something like that. But let's do a quick refresher. What you're looking for is how physical addresses work on a switch. Now, Jason,
yeah.
You've done a little bit of networking, right? You've reviewed products and stuff like that.
Yeah, although I will fully admit networking is not my strong suit. Sometimes I get overwhelmed by what's going on behind the scenes.
Right. But you've seen your IP address.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know that there's a unique IP address for every computer because
absolutely.
You can't have two devices with the same IP address on the same network because otherwise the people don't know which one they're talking to.
It's mayhem.
Mayhem. 100% mayhem. Yeah. No, here's the thing, though. People think that IP address is the thing. It's the way that traffic gets moved around on the network. Mm-hmm. That's not actually true. The IP address is a number that's overlaid on top of what's called the physical address, the MAC address,
right,
M-A-C. That's a group of hexadecimal characters that is unique for every single device ever made. Now, way back when they first started doing this, they gave blocks of addresses to the different manufacturers of networking equipment. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's kind of easy for me to figure out what's connected, because with just the first couple of characters, I go, oh, that's a 3Com device, or that's an HP device, or that's a Cisco device. Mm-hmm. More importantly, though, it means that every device that connects to the network has a unique address that only belongs to it. That is how traffic gets routed around. Let me show you exactly how that works. Okay,
sure.
So if you look at your device, you will know what the MAC address looks like. It looks like FF colon FF colon FF colon FF colon FF, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it could be any character from 0 all the way up to F. So 1A, 2F, 3B, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when a device first connects to the network, let's say this one ends in 1-1, what's going to happen is, let's say it goes to talk to my router. Let's say this is my router down here. And my router is doing DHCP, Dynamic Host Control Protocol. That's the thing that gives you the address.
Okay.
And it says, hey, I'm new to the network. Can I have an address? What's going to happen is it will first send out a broadcast packet, broadcast frame, which will go to all the devices connected to this network. And it will say, hey, which one of you is the gateway? The router will respond, I'm the gateway. Now, this computer builds up inside of its memory. It's got a table. Router. It's got a table of the physical address of the router. Because it broadcast it out and said, oh, you're the router? Okay, let me make a note of that.
Sure.
So I know where to send packets in the future, right? Or where to send frames. Now, the router also will say, oh, you're new. I'm going to add you to my memory. So it's got an entry for computer one. Okay. Now, here's the fun thing. As you keep talking to devices, all of the devices are going to add up little memory tables of all the other devices that it's talked to. So it knows, oh, I once talked to that computer, 192.168.44.44, and it's at physical address of this. Mm-hmm. And it builds up a table in its memory of what that looks like. In fact, I can show you what that looks like. Alex, if you go and go to my computer.
As a history, even long after it's still connected to that, does it keep that?
It will clear it eventually.
It'll clear it eventually.
But if you go to my computer, so what I'm going to do is, this is the command prompt. I'm going to put ARP-A. This will show me all of the devices that are in my memory.
Hmm.
And so it shows you the IP address, it shows you the physical address, the MAC address, and it will show you, was this dynamically or statically set?
Okay, question. If all MAC addresses are different, how come there's like three with the FFFFFFF?
Those are broadcast.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not actual devices.
Got it.
So if you look at the address there, 192.168.200.255, if you actually wanted to find out, here's a cheap trick, by the way, folks. Unless the network has been configured not to allow this, if you want to find out what everything is on the network, put ping space, and then, like, if it's a 192.168.0.255, that's a broadcast packet. It basically says, hey, who's here? Mm. Who's here? Mm. Who's here? And the devices will respond, and it will add all of those devices to its table.
Mm. Like flies being attracted to light at night.
Like or geeks bugs. To honey. I think I'm mixing my metaphors.
Me too.
Okay. All right. So here's how this is going to work. So now it knows, okay, so if I want to talk to this device 00, it knows, oh, that is connected to this port, which is connected to this port, which is connected to that port. So it actually has a map.
Uh-huh.
And all of that is kept in the memory of the switch and of the router, which also has its own switch, as well as the memory of the device itself.
Okay.
So the older a network gets, so the longer it stays in operation, the more filled out those tables will get. That's the nice thing about network operations. When you shut everything down and you first turn it back on,
every device is querying to every other device, and it's a flurry of traffic. And that's why, like, when you restart a switch sometimes, you'll get all those activity lights going on. It's because that's all the devices saying, oh, this is new. Yeah, what's going on?
The longer that list, does that slow things down?
It just slows things down because the a broadcast packet, which is what we were talking about, hits every device. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing that, you're wasting a lot of bandwidth.
Sure.
Right. But after that broadcast packet, once it knows where each of these devices are, it doesn't have to broadcast. It says, oh, I need to send to the device at point 44, which I know is ends in 55 for its MAC address, and that's connected to this port, and this port, and just sends it straight there.
Right. So, interesting.
Now, if you plug a switch in, that switch will slowly populate with the same information. That's why I can plug a switch in and then reconnect all the devices that were connected to the old switch, and everything will still work. It might take a couple of seconds for the memory to fill out.
Right.
But once a device reaches out to where it thought it was and it's no longer there, it will just send out a broadcast package and say, hey, where's that device I talked to before? Mm-hmm. And the other switch will say, oh, I think I have it over here. It will rebuild its memory table. It now knows where to go.
Hmm. Very neat.
So, I mean, here's the fun thing. I love talking about this because this is all happening in these consumer devices that have cost next to nothing based on, you know, what we used to have to pay for them. Mm-hmm. And they are incredibly complicated. They are wonders of technology.
Are they doing it well?
Sometimes.
Because, I mean, you know, cost-effective, they're consumer devices, low point of entry. That just kind of, in my brain, adds up to, yeah, but, you know, what kind of havoc could it cause on your network because it wasn't built well or efficient?
That's the thing. And that's sort of the cutoff.
Yeah.
If you need to go above small office, that's what I would then start calling enterprise. If you take a piece of consumer gear and you put it into an enterprise environment, it will die.
That's when,
yeah, because it doesn't have enough memory. It can't route to all the devices that it needs. And it will just be a weak point in your network. It won't just be slow. It could kill the rest of the network. And by kill, I mean make it not work until you remove it.
Right.
It's not going to actually blow anything up. Here's the wonderful thing. The reason why our devices are getting so competent is because most of these companies started off as enterprise companies. And then they realized, oh, I can sell 100 super high-end switches to such and such a company, or I can sell 1 million switches to the consumers. Mm-hmm. And I can take the technology or some of it that I put into the high-end switch.
Some of the work we've already done. Yeah.
There you go.
Figure out how to market it properly and package it properly.
Yeah. I mean, 10 years ago, this Synology, this $200 box, would be faster than a $500,000 NAS for the, or we would be using a SAN back then.
Right.
That I used to have to buy for an enterprise. You probably had one of those at ZDNet, or right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
CNET.
Yes.
That was pain in the butt. Yeah, those are crazy expensive. This is faster. Mm-hmm. Go figure. All right. So let's move on from this to one more Synology crazy thing, because this is Synology Madness, and this is entirely built in, and I think you're going to like this. Jason, one of the things that came out the last couple of months here was the fact that some people don't want to store things in the cloud anymore. There's been a little bit of legislation that essentially means that any law enforcement agency, either ours or those who are cooperating with ours, can access without a warrant and without really telling anybody, especially not you, anything that you put in the cloud.
Absolutely. Whether that was always kind of a threat beforehand or not, at the same time and concurrently, people have grown to really rely on the convenience of cloud storage. I mean, it's the modern computing kind of paradigm, is that if it's not in the cloud, you're really missing a significant amount of that kind of the convenience factor, the functionality that you expect out of the web, the expanded kind of extended capabilities of the web. So knowing that now, I mean, it's almost like how you put it back in, you know, the genie back in the bottle.
You really can't.
You can't. The best thing that you can do is kind of protect the data that you're putting into the cloud, or probably create your own, right?
Yeah. Now, that's the thing. The people who have been following this for our careers for a long, long time, we've always been telling people, if you put it in the cloud, just assume someone else can see it.
Sure.
You know, email, we knew, because there were well-documented cases of the U.S. government and other governments being able to read email that's left on a cloud server.
Yeah.
But even things like Dropbox and OneDrive, you know, the companies have tried to protect their customers, but if they get one of those FISA orders,
there's nothing they can do. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't talk about it. They can't argue it. There's no appeal. They just sort of have to turn stuff over. Mm-hmm. Well, what if I told you can have the convenience of the cloud, you know, of like a Dropbox or a OneDrive or even Gmail, but not have to worry about the government actually coming in and just pulling it off of the server in a data center?
I'd say, go on.
Let's do it. And actually, that's built in to every Synology box, from the lowest end to the highest end. They've included a new feature called Quick Connect. Now, in the old days, when I was still using Netgear NASes, I could do this, but the way I would have to do it is I would have to poke a hole in my firewall. I would have to say, if you get an incoming request, then route that to this device on this port. Mm-hmm. Automatically, they don't like doing that because poking a hole in your network means other people can get in.
Sure.
Other than that, it also meant that I had to know my IP address at all times. And if you're on one of these ISPs that switches IP addresses, that's a no bueno. In fact, some IPs actually prevent inbound connections, so you wouldn't be able to do it at all. Quick Connect is different, because it does not rely on an inbound connection. What it does is it has your box ping the Synology server. So when you want to access your box, you actually don't talk to your box. You talk to the Synology server, which then creates a session between the two of you. So you've never had to open up a hole in your firewall. You never have to worry about an inbound connection into your network. And as long as you have that Synology account, you will always be able to access all of your Synology boxes.
Hmm.
Want to see how it works?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So this is built in. I don't even have to download and install anything. It's just called Quick Connect. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to first create an account on Synology.com. If you have a brand new box, this is going to happen automatically. When the first time you turn on your NAS, it's going to say, would you like to create an account? Please don't be like me and just go, no, 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 or next, 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 next. Go ahead and create the account, because that's the account that you're going to store this information inside of. Now, if you come back to my my computer, if you just go into the control panel and you go into Quick Connect, there we go. So I have enabled Quick Connect. It's tied to this email address, arbellis@jesuit.org. That's not new. People have known that. Quick ID. This is the ID that's unique to my box. Now, I have, if you can blow up on this, Alex, I want to see how many people are going to try to hit this thing. So quickconnect.to/twitbox. That is a unique address. That's only my device. Okay. So if I go into any browser on a Windows box, a Linux box, you're doing it right now, aren't you?
I'm going to see.
if I do that, go ahead.
It's twit what?
Quickconnect.to/twitbox.
Does caps matter?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what you'll do is you'll get my authentication page.
I'm connecting here. I don't know if you can see this on the overhead because I don't have my...
See, here's the thing. People are saying it's going to DOS me. It's not, because the authentication is actually done on the Synology side. It's not even reaching my box.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to go ahead and shut that down.
I'm connecting still. Yeah. Not really.
Let me disable that. Okay.
All done.
There you go.
Yeah, I got the login page.
See? He'll have to do is he'll have to add my credentials. Or actually, you could put your credentials. Put Jason. Mm-hmm. We're about to make this box owned across the world. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
And
boom.
There we go.
There you go. So you could do that from anywhere in the world. Like, everyone's going to be... I kind of want to watch this box now and see how many people log in as Jason. Because that's going to be...
It's not me. I'm logging out now. You can't... Whatever you're doing,
folks,
it's not me.
Right now, I am breaking so many rules we have about not exposing public private information, but because I love know-how. Go ahead. Jason, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, great. Now everybody knows my password for everything.
That's probably going to change. By the time this hits the download
yes.
change. I'm sorry.
This is a treat for you live viewers.
But see, here's the fun thing. I will have access to everything on that box.
Okay.
That's my cloud. And it's not in the cloud. It's behind my firewall, protected by my network. And it doesn't matter where I am. I can have secure access to my box, to my data. And it's built in. We love built in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I'm in here. I want to get to the files. Is it?
Oh, so go to.
Oh,
your,
there we go. Yeah. Okay.
I see the darkness is down there.
There you go.
As well. Excellent. There they are. On my Chromebook.
On my Pixelbook. On your Pixelbook.
Nice.
And it also has, by the way, in the next segment, we're going to show you the Cloud Connect DS, which allows you to do this on mobile devices. So iPads, Androids, Android phones, tablets, et cetera, et cetera. It really is a really well-done ecosystem. And this is the reason why I've been so hot on Synology. QNAP, I like their hardware, but the Synology software is so far ahead. It's really the way to go.
I like it. Right? That's really handy.
And by the way, we will get you a box to your house. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that's how we roll. So you know what? Hey, folks, I'm going to leave this on for the next 30
Dude,
minutes.
You're worse.
Have fun. Have fun. There's stuff in there.
Show us what you're capable of. I'm scared. I'm going to log out now.
They can download it.
I don't want to be in there whenever what happens is going to happen.
Yeah, please don't put WannaCry on there. That's just mean.
Quit putting ideas in their brain. Just stop. Just stop talking.
Oh, folks, we know that this has been a lot of information. And, well, you don't have to play the episode over and over again. You can just go to our show notes. Jason, where are our show notes?
You can find show notes at twit.tv/KH for Kano How.
Yeah. Now, while you're there, not only can you get all the show notes and all the back episodes, but you can also subscribe. This is the best way to support the show. If you want us to keep doing projects, if you want us to keep bringing you things like Synology Madness, then choose an audio version, a video version, or a high-definition video version to see what's cracking. That's what the kids say, right?
I don't know. Is it?
Is that hip?
I think that was hip.
Am
like
I being cool?
25. Years ago.
Dang it, I knew it. Also, don't forget we're all over the socials.
Yeah.
Specifically, you can find us on Google+. Just go to Google+, a very short approval process to enter the group know-how. But once you're in, you get access to almost 12,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls. You can ask questions, answer questions, post pictures of your projects, and maybe it will end up here on the show.
Nice.
Yeah. But that's not the only social thing that we do. We're like butterflies, so we're on Twitter, right? Where are you?
I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. You can find me there. I'm a social butterfly there.
And you can find me flapping my wings at twitter.com/PadreSJ. And, of course, you can find the third member of our crew. The darkness. Likes to be called The Darkness.
Excuse me, Padre. I can't. I that's too much. Nervous.
He has to deal with the network, so I get that.
You're killing me.
You should know better, Padre.
You're killing me, Smalls. You can find Alex at twitter.com/ my soul is like a black hole. No, at ANELF.
No, that was right the first time.
You changed it.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
I'm Jason Howell.
And now that you know how,
go Nez it!